This is Viewpoint with attorney and author Chuck Crismeyer. Viewpoint is a one-hour talk show confronting the issues of America's heart and home. And now with today's edition of Viewpoint, here is Chuck Crismeyer.
Trump threatens Russia with new sanctions and Trump ready to meet with Putin anytime. Trump admits love for the Russian people and offers Putin a deal. All that today on Viewpoint, and I'm glad that you've joined us. It's conversation as always. With ever-increasing conviction, talk that transforms. And the reality is we're not hearing much about Ukraine right now. We're not hearing much about all of that that was so disturbing to us. We're not hearing much about sanctions these days. We're hearing just a lot about, well, deliveries from the White House, changes in the works everywhere, changes in the works, domestic change. And yes, indeed, foreign policy change. Lavrov, there, the foreign minister in Russia, on Monday weighed in on Trump's return to White House. The new U.S. administration's foreign policy course, he said, will define the global order. The new U.S. administration's policies will largely determine the world order, he said. Moscow is open to contact with Washington, according to the top diplomat. Lavrov made the remarks during a meeting of the Russian National Security Council hosted by President Vladimir Putin. Speculation is growing about his influence, that is, Donald Trump's influence in the Middle East and Ukraine conflicts, among other issues. Therefore, much, said Lavrov, depends on the United States, first of all, because the Europeans and Asians, allies of the U.S., Australia, Japan, South Korea, New Zealand are fully oriented to the position of the White House, and in this sense, they are waiting to see what this position will be in its final form. He went on to say that Trump has repeatedly vowed to bring an end to the ongoing conflicts. Last week, while discussing the transition in Washington, Lavrov said that the outgoing administration, that is, the Biden administration, was trying to, quote, spoil the whole thing for the next administration before the end of their mandate, unquote. Trump has also signaled his intent to engage in talks with Putin, particularly with the aim of bringing the Ukraine conflict to an end. He's described the hostilities between Moscow and Kyiv as a product of Biden's diplomatic blunders, which he said had serious repercussions for all parties, including the United States. Last week, Trump announced that he planned to meet with Putin very quickly. On Monday, the Russian leader expressed good wishes for Trump ahead of the inauguration and said that Moscow welcomes his statements about wanting to restore relations with Russia and prevent the proxy war that is currently ongoing there with Ukraine. And so there is the introduction that we have today coming from the second-in-command there in Russia, the Mr. Lavrov, who is the top diplomat there in Russia. On the other hand, we have Russia entering into agreements with those that are not conceived to be a blessing to America or to Israel or to anybody else, and that includes Iran. A new alliance is forming. And everybody's talking about the Russia-Iran deal, except we don't hear about it in the United States because we're all talking about executive orders. Executive orders that have to do primarily with what's going on in this country, but not talking about what's going on elsewhere. Today, everybody else is talking about executive orders, so we're not going to talk about executive orders. We're going to talk about something that's even bigger in one sense and will determine whether or not all the executive orders really are carrying sway around the world. Trump ready to meet with Putin anytime. That's what the Russian Times has said. But it also says that Trump threatens Russia with new sanctions. It also says that Trump admits love for the Russian people and offers Putin a deal. Another says that there's a window of opportunity for Russia-U.S. relations. That's coming from Moscow. All of that coming from Moscow. But then again, we have President Xi Jinping there in China, entering into a new level in Russia-China relations. Then Russia is entering into a new agreement with Iran to deepening their relations and to back a gas pipeline to Iran. What is going on? How are we to comprehend and understand the dynamics of what's going on in our world? Well, welcome to 2025. Welcome to international geopolitics and also the role of petrol, oil, and gas. It seems that oil and gas make the world go around. It used to be said that love makes the world go around, but now it seems that oil and gas make the world go around. And so we're going to be talking about that in the context of this, what should we say, it's almost difficult to even put it into words what is actually happening around the world, the repositioning of the world order, a new global order, a so-called multipolar world order established by Russia and China and all of the countries that they're involved with now through the BRICS organization. And then you have the so-called Western world order governed by, as they say, the White House, determining everything that happens in the Western world. So you have two world orders that are in the process. The Western world order, which is basically made up of the resurrected Roman Empire of ancient times. Then you have the Eastern world empire that is being launched with Russia and China and all of the other countries that are being amalgamated together with them under the BRICS nations. And then you have, well, you could call it the Muslim or Islamic world order. And in order for the Muslim or Islamic world order to take place, they know that they have to play footsie with Russia and China. And so there's a lot of interplay in all of these. Overall, it's the battle for King of the Mountain. It's the battle for rulership in the world. And ultimately, it is said that he who rules the Temple Mount is the one who rules the world. And so essentially, what we're looking at here is interplay among the nations that is setting the stage, the final stage, for the ultimate world orders, not just one world order, but several world orders, probably three of them, that will form the basis for the powers that ultimately will be, at the end of the age, to meet in the valley, the Jezreel Valley, called Armageddon, for that final great world battle. All of that setting the stage here on Viewpoint today, and I'm glad that you've joined us. We try to confront the deepest issues of America's heart and home, but also the issues that confront others around our world, because in one sense, we're in this together, particularly as Christians. We're in this together. We have to understand things that way. It's not about just about my country, right or wrong, as much as we love our country, but it's about something bigger. It's about the kingdom of God, isn't it? We'll be right back. Stay tuned.
Once upon a time, children could pray and read their Bibles in school. Divorces were practically unknown, as was child abuse. In our once great America, virginity and chastity were popular virtues, and homosexuality was an abomination.
So what happened in just one generation?
Hi, I'm Chuck Crismeyer, and I urge you to join me daily on Viewpoint, where we discuss the most challenging issues touching our hearts and homes. Could America's moral slide relate to the Fourth Commandment?
Listen to Viewpoint on this radio station or anytime at saveus.org.
Trump threatens Russia with new sanctions, all the while saying, we're going to settle this thing. We're going to settle this thing with Ukraine. In fact, the day of his inauguration, people said, well, you said you were going to settle all that in one day, the first day. He said, well, I've got 12 hours left, facetiously. Indeed, he does intend to settle this thing with Ukraine, and has just threatened Russia with new sanctions. On the other hand, looking into the possibility of sending additional weapons to Kyiv, as the U.S. president has said. Donald Trump has said that Washington could impose more sanctions on Russia if it refuses to engage in talks on settling the Ukraine conflict. So during a press conference yesterday, Trump was asked if Russian President Vladimir Putin's reluctance to negotiate will lead to additional curbs against Moscow, on top of the thousands of restrictions already introduced under Joe Biden. So Trump responded, "Sounds likely." President Trump, who had been extremely critical of Biden for supplying military aid to Ukraine, did not rule out that possibility of Washington sending more weapons to Kyiv during his tenure. He said, "Well, we'll look into it." However, Trump insisted that Brussels, that is heading up the EU, should equalize with Washington when it comes to amount of support it provides to Ukraine. He said, "We're in there for $200 billion or more than the EU. I mean, what are we, stupid?" "They must think so," said the president. He again expressed a readiness to engage in discussions with Putin to end the fighting between Moscow and Kyiv. "We are talking," he said, "to the Ukrainian leader Zelensky. We're going to be talking with President Putin very soon, and we'll see how it all happens," said Trump. The U.S. president called Putin smart, suggesting that the Ukraine conflict started because the Russian leader had disrespected Biden. In other words, did not respect Biden. Trump also said that he had urged Chinese President Xi Jinping to join efforts to stop the hostilities between Russia and Ukraine during their recent phone call. "He has not done very much on that. He's got a lot of power," said Trump. "We have a lot of power. So," he said, "you ought to get it settled." So we discussed it. Well, there's a lot of discussion going on, but talk is cheap, isn't it? On the other hand, when you see, when the world sees, when Xi Jinping sees, when Donald Trump, when Vladimir Putin sees, when the Khamenei and the president of Iran sees that Mr. Trump is doing what he said he was going to do and not wasting any time in doing it. All of that sets the stage, the atmosphere, for getting this done. In other words, when they see that somebody means business, it's not just talk, then things can happen. So one writer for the Russian Times says there's a window of opportunity for Russia and the U.S. relations. This writer says the Biden administration was completely hopeless. That was the deputy foreign minister there in Russia. He said relations between Russia and the U.S. could improve under President Trump. And he suggested both Moscow and Washington have recently signaled a willingness to engage in talks over the Ukraine conflict. And Putin had congratulated Trump on taking office on Monday and reiterated his readiness to dialogue with the new administration. So Trump's team has long been preparing for a call to with Putin to initiate a process aimed at resolving the Ukraine conflict. So we can't say anything at the moment about the new administration's capacity to negotiate, but still, compared to the complete hopelessness of the former U.S. President Joe Biden, there is a window of opportunity today, maybe a small one. That's the deputy there in Russia making that statement. Trump said his team would be talking with Putin very soon about settling the Ukraine conflict. During his campaign, the new U.S. president reportedly pledged to swiftly end the hostilities once in power. But what will it mean? What will it mean? Will Ukraine be part of NATO? Russia says no way. No way. That would be an absolute no-no. No way will they allow Ukraine to become part of NATO. Because that would mean NATO would be right on its border and would be able to establish all of its military power there right on the border of Russia which does not make Russians feel safe. You can understand that. We can all understand that. On the other hand, Ukraine is part of Russia, is part of Europe, as is Western Russia. One-third of Russia is technically part of Europe. On the other hand, two-thirds of Russia is technically part of a more Asian area, and all of Russia covers 11 time zones, believe it or not. It's the largest country in land area in the world, Russia. So this is what we're looking at, and let's put this in context. Let me introduce yet another part of the puzzle. Another part of the puzzle takes us to the Bible in Ezekiel 38 and 39. It's the passage referring to what is commonly said to be the Gog and Magog War. Some people say that's the same as the Battle of Armageddon. Others say no. I tend to think that it's not, because the Battle of Gog and Magog says that the carnage is going to be so great that the weapons are going to be used by Israel for energy for 7 years. That's what the Bible says. Well, if that be true, then I thought the Battle of Armageddon was going to be the cleanup for the world. So something doesn't seem to ring true between the idea of Gog and Magog and Armageddon being the same. But I'm not going to put my hand on the Bible and say this is that and this is absolutely true. That's just my viewpoint. And on the other hand, we do know that Russia, Gog and Magog, the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, is going to gather together Iran, that's Persia, and Libya and Togarma and Gomer and many other nations with them to attack Israel to take a spoil in the latter days when Israel is in relative peace. So, Israel must be in relative peace. Things are going to happen such that Israel will be in relative peace until, that is, something happens that is going to trigger Russia and its allies to attack Israel to take a spoil. Now, what would that spoil be? Well, some have historically thought that that spoil would be minerals in the Dead Sea. Yes, the Dead Sea does have a lot of valuable minerals, but nothing compared to oil and gas. Ever since those speculations, Israel has come into massive gas reserves there just off the coast, there in the Mediterranean, enough to provide Israel with sustenance for its own needs for at least 70 years, plus enough to export to other countries. It has completely changed the energy scene with regard to Israel. What has not happened is the discovery of oil, or at least the release of oil that has already been identified underneath the soil of Israel. It is my conviction, although I'm not going to say, thus saith the Lord, it is my deep conviction that indeed that kind of discovery, release of oil, is going to take place before too long. How long is before too long? I can't tell you. But in the not-too-distant future. In the meantime, the whole issue of oil and gas is being jockeyed around to use as pressure by the United States via the Biden administration, then through the EU, to put pressure on Russia through hundreds of sanctions and to try to keep Europe from using Russian oil and gas for its own economies. Well, that has created a problem, a big problem, a very big problem. We're going to talk about that problem here. The European Commission chief, Ursula von der Leyen, has admitted that the loss of Russian energy because of all the sanctions and because President Biden, choreographed the EU to reject using Russian oil and gas, it has triggered what von der Leyen says as sky-high costs for Europe. Doing away with the cheap fossil fuel deliveries from Moscow has come at a price, she said. Energy prices across the EU have skyrocketed due to the disruption of cheap supplies from Russia. Speaking at the World Economic Forum in Davos yesterday, she acknowledged that the loss of Russian supplies has exacerbated the bloc's energy crisis. Before 2022, the EU was receiving 45% of its gas and 50% of its coal from Russia, while Moscow was one of the bloc's largest oil suppliers. She said this energy appeared cheap, but it exposed us to blackmail from Russia. So she asserted that Russian President Vladimir Putin cut us off his gas supplies after the conflict in Ukraine erupted in February of 2022. She went on to say, our gas imports from Russia went down by roughly 75%, and now we import from Russia only 3% of our oil and no coal at all. So the EU has imposed sweeping sanctions on Russia, targeting its industry as well as energy and financial sectors. In 2022, Russia suspended the flow of gas to Germany through the Nord Stream pipeline. In September of 2022, the twin Nord Stream pipelines, which run under the Baltic Sea, were hit by sabotage. So Hungary and Slovakia, there in Europe, have been increasingly calling on Brussels, that is representing, it's like the Washington of the EU, on Brussels to review its sanctions policy and seek a diplomatic solution to the conflict in Ukraine. So, in fact, there is pressure now in Europe to settle the conflict with Ukraine and to put pressure on both Russia and the United States to get it done, because they're the only two powers that can really work on this. So what we have here, you can go back to Matthew chapter 24, where Jesus talked about the end of the age and there will be wars and rumors of wars and so on. Well, there are wars and there are rumors of wars and rumors of this and rumors of that. But the reality is that these things had to take place and have to take place in order to set the geopolitical stage for the fulfillment of biblical prophecy. And that's exactly what's happening. These things are not happening in a vacuum, friends. They're happening. God knows exactly what's happening and why it is happening. The problem is that we don't. We don't quite get it. We don't connect the dots. And so on this program, we attempt to do our best to connect the dots so that we can make meaningful understanding of the dynamics of what is taking place, and we're not caught off base, just the suckers, shall we say, of every variety of communication by news media that doesn't tell us the truth, is renowned for not telling us the truth, and doesn't even understand the facts, and doesn't even care, because they have secondary agendas. So in this program, we try to keep the main thing the main thing. What is the main thing? The main thing is the kingdom of God and his righteousness. That's what the Bible said, and that was what Jesus said. Seek first the kingdom of God and his righteousness, and then all these other things will be added. So where does the kingdom of God fit in this? Where does biblical prophecy fit in this? We'll talk about that when we get back. Stay tuned, friends. You're listening to Viewpoint.
There is so much more about Chuck Crismeyer and Save America Ministries on our website, saveus.org. For example, under the marriage section, God has marriage on his mind. Chuck has some great resources to strengthen your marriage. First off, a fact sheet on the state of the marital union, a fact sheet on the state of ministry, marriage, and morals. SaveUS.org. Marriage, divorce, and remarriage. What does the Bible really teach about this? Find all of this at SaveUS.org. Also, a letter to pastors, the Hosea Project, SaveUS.org, and many more resources to strengthen your marriage. It's all on Chuck's website, SaveUS.org. Again, you can listen to Chuck's Viewpoint broadcast live and archived. Save America Ministries website at SaveUS.org.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Crismeyer. We're talking about what's going on with regard to our foreign policy, and particularly with regard to Ukraine and Iran and Russia and China. So, in order to get a better picture, a bigger picture from a biblical perspective on what the dynamics are that are taking place, I want to direct your attention to my book, King of the Mountain. King of the Mountain, the Eternal Epic End Time Battle. A triple subtitle, He Who Rules the Temple Mount Rules the World. But it's also said that he who rules the energy rules the world. So, if he who rules the energy rules the world, or controls the energy rules the world, and he who rules the Temple Mount rules the world, then using rational connection, we would say that he who rules controls the energy also will rule the Temple Mount and rule the world. Now, that being the case, or even close to the case, we have a situation that's developing showing us a world order that is rapidly reforming. Reforming, such as to set the stage for the final great competitors to rule the world. They're going to gather together, or they are gathering together, in joint efforts because they know that individually they cannot do this. So they're gathering together in joint efforts to try to place themselves in a position to rule the energy or control the energy of the world, and then also to be able to rule the world from the Temple Mount. Chapter 23 of that book is called The Great Game, Black Gold and Global Governance. And as you read that chapter, you're going to find how the very things that I am sharing with you have been quoted, have been declared in various news media all over the world over the past 15 years. And it's happening right in front of our faces. And we don't have anybody connecting the dots. But they're connected in this book. King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic and End Time Battle. $15 will put the book in your hands. It's on our website, saveus.org, saveus.org. You can write to us at Save America Ministries, P.O. Box 70879, Richmond, Virginia, 23255. If you're writing a check, add $6 for postage and handling. You can call us at 1-800-SAVE-USA. If you don't have this book, I urge you to get it. It's going to be very hard for you to understand and comprehend the importance of this book until you read it. And that's why, when a Jewish talk show host decided to interview me concerning it, he set a time for an hour, and halfway through, he said, there's no way we could even begin to touch this book in this time. Would you be willing to come on next week? So I did. Then he said the same thing the next week, because the book is so absolutely loaded and brings a viewpoint, a position that ties things together in a way that it's almost impossible to deny. So, the end result of that Jewish talk show host request was that we came on for 7 weeks in a row. 7 hours of interview concerning one book. And that was, he wasn't even a Christian. But he could see the power, tying it together, seeing all of the pieces coming together, both historically and currently. Yes, Iran involved in it all, that is Persia. Yes, Israel involved. Yes, Iran. Yes, the Western world order. Yes, Russia. Yes, China. All coming together. It's an amazing piece, friends. Chapter 20 is called Gog and Magog versus God. Get a copy of it. King of the Mountain, the Eternal Epic End Time Battle. $15 on our website, saveus.org. By the way, if you don't make a habit of remembering to tell other people about the website, about the radio program, and so on, I urge you to do that. Because if you value the program, then there are going to be others that will too. Not everybody, but there are going to be others who will. And you can be an agent of getting a message out to prepare the way of the Lord for history's final hour. You can be a messenger, an ambassador for the kingdom of God by doing that. So, just putting a little thought in your, a bee in your bonnet, a thought in your head. All right, let's move forward here to take a look why everybody is talking about the Russian-Iranian deal. What Russian-Iranian deal? Well, obviously, Russia and Iran are engaged in something very big from their perspective. Moscow and Tehran have been working toward a new deal for years. But what matters more is the impact it's going to have on the future global order, says the Russian Times. Global order. Did you catch that? World order, global order. Over and over again now, those are the words that are being used. This opened up a new chapter in the bilateral relations between Russia and Iran that have existed for 400 years. The agreement they've entered into states that the parties will refrain from providing military or other assistance to an aggressor in the case of an attack on either nation. The agreement does not cover military technical cooperation. However, that doesn't rule out such an agreement being signed in the future. What it does focus on is business and economic relationships to work together in cooperation on the global stage. This is a big, big deal. This is a huge deal. And you hardly hear anything about it in the news. The construction of a gas pipeline from Russia to Iran via Azerbaijan was another key aspect of the agreement. The 20-year agreement highlights the long-term nature of the partnership and can later be automatically extended. In other words, this is not just a temporary thing. This is intended to be a big thing to change the dynamics of the world. Khamenei there in Iran has long been a major proponent, not opponent, but proponent, of deepening ties with Russia. As early as the 2000s, he identified Moscow as one of the key centers of power in international relations. So his statements reflect a strategic vision for the future world order. The future world order. where Russia plays a key role as a counterbalance to the unipolar system promoted by the West, i.e. the resurrected Roman Empire. So Khamenei believes that close cooperation with Russia is necessary to secure Iran's standing on the global stage. Notice everything is about the global stage, the world order. Isn't that what the folk at Davos, Switzerland, are also talking about this very day? Right now, the business moguls and others of the world are gathered together in Davos, Switzerland, for the annual World Economic Forum gathering. And what do you think they're doing? What do you think they're really talking about? They're talking about setting the stage for the great reset of world order to take place by 2030. In other words, 5 years from now. I want you to consider that number. 5 years from now. Does that make any sense to you? Does that make any difference to you if you understood it's 5 years from now instead of 25 or 55 years from now? You see, everything is becoming foreshortened for our view of history and prophecy. It's all merging together. I like to say it's like the rivers and tributaries of the world are all converging into one surging maelstrom rushing toward the second coming of Jesus Christ. That's what's happening. And it's happening right in front of our eyes, and we don't get it. The election of Donald Trump is not just about the election of Donald Trump. He believes that he was elected for a reason. He believes that he was chosen, set apart by God for a particular reason. Well, he says to make America great again, but maybe that's just his viewpoint. Maybe what he's really set apart for doing is to accomplish some of these other things that are necessary to set the stage for the coming of the Lord. He didn't say that because he doesn't understand things in those terms. Generally speaking, Donald Trump is not a spiritually minded man. He mentions God, and that we're a nation under God, and we appreciate that. But in general, he's not a spiritually minded man. Notwithstanding the fact that he supposedly has had spiritual guides who have come alongside and spoken into his life, maybe he'll have a revelation. Maybe he'll have a spiritual inspiration. We'll see. But until then, he's an instrument accomplishing these things. Says have to happen. We'll be right back.
Have you ever considered what the early church was like? Many people are developing a heart longing for a greater fulfillment in our practices as Christians. A recent study showed 53,000 people a week are leaving the back door of America's churches in frustration. What is going on? Why has there not been even a 1% gain among followers of Christ in the last 25 years? Could it be that God is seeking to restore first century Christianity for the 21st century? Jesus said, "I'll build my church." Is Christ by His Spirit stirring to prepare the church for the 21st century? The early church prayed together and broke bread from house to house. They were family, and it was said by all who observed, "Behold how they love one another." Incredible.
But the same can be found right now. Go to saveus.org and click Sell Church. We can revive first century Christianity for the 21st century.
It's about people, not programs. It's about a body, not a building.
That's saveus.org. Click Sell Church.
Again, I welcome you back to Viewpoint. I'm Chuck Chrismeyer. We're talking about the interrelationship between Russia and the Ukraine and China and Iran and the EU and the US and the entire resurrected Roman Empire called NATO. Those are the nation groups and the organizations that are forming within those groups that are setting the stage for the final events of world history. They're not to be understood just independently. They have interconnectedness, and that's what we need to understand, and that's what we're attempting to do here on this program, is to help us to understand to some degree the interconnectedness between them that sets the bigger stage for the final events of world history. The rise of the Antichrist, the war of Gog and Magog of Ezekiel 38 and 39, the Battle of Armageddon of Revelation chapter 16, and ultimately the second coming of our Lord to judge the world in righteousness in Revelation 19. So in the meantime, we're focusing particularly on Russia. We're focusing particularly on the role of Donald Trump now, as he has been reinstated as president of the United States, the most powerful country still on the planet. Will he be able to restore enough of the moral and spiritual essence of the country in order to protect God's favor over the country? That remains to be seen. It remains to be seen. When he has come directly against the DEI stuff and canceled it all out, as of, I believe, today, every DEI office in the country, federal office, has been closed. He has established a declaration that there should be no flag hanging on any embassy in the world of the United States other than the United States flag. No pride flags. No Black Lives Matter flags, none of that woke political stuff. No, only the American flag. Those are steps to try to reorient the country. He's come against the transgender movement. Those are steps to reorient the country to a basic moral foundation. And that's a good thing. But the bigger thing that's going on in our world is something that the Bible actually talks about. Now, if Gog and Magog, and the chief prince of Meshach and Tubal, is referring to a Slavic people known as currently as Russia, and Trump now admits, at least this is the headline for the Russian Times, Trump admits love for Russian people and offers Putin a deal. So here it is. The U.S. president has urged Moscow today to end the Ukrainian conflict the easy way, he said, threatening more sanctions if it doesn't. Trump today issued a thinly veiled ultimatum to Russia, urging it to bring the Ukrainian conflict to an end and strike a deal or face new sanctions and high import tariffs. In other words, he's upping the ante with Vladimir Putin. Now, that makes sense that Vladimir Putin might pay attention because he sees what Donald Trump is doing with regard to all these other issues and not waiting around to figure out what to do, but he's already prepared and is doing it on the national and international stages. In other words, he's making things happen. We've not had this kind of leadership for a very long time. We've had destructive leadership, but we haven't had this kind of leadership in a very long time. And Vladimir Putin sees that. In fact, the whole world sees it, even Xi Jinping. So Trump issued a warning in his post on Truth Social online platform, claiming his, quotation mark, love, quotation mark, for the Russian people, and insisting he was not looking to hurt Russia. We must never forget that Russia helped us win the Second World War, losing a massive number of lives in the process. All that being said, he said, I'm going to do Russia, whose economy is failing, and President Putin is a very big favor. He said, I'm going to do Russia and Putin a very big favor. We're going to settle now and stop this ridiculous war. It's only going to get worse, said Trump. So should no deal on the matter materialize soon enough? Then we'll have no other choice, he said, but to put high levels of tariffs and sanctions on anything being sold by Russia to the United States and various other participating countries. He also reiterated that the Russian-Ukrainian conflict would never have started if he had been in office. And that's very likely. So he said, we can either do this the easy way or the hard way. And the easy way is always better, Trump warned Moscow. Earlier in the day, he reiterated his readiness to engage in talks with Russian President Vladimir Putin, insisting he'd had a very strong understanding with the Russian leader before, and asked when exactly the talk could happen. Trump said, anytime they want, I'll meet. We're talking to Zelensky. We're going to be talking with President Putin very soon, and we'll see how all this happens, he said. So that is the spirit, and you can see, if you understand the nature of what it takes to make a deal. As a former trial lawyer, that's what I had to do. To settle a case, every case is not settled in a courtroom. The majority of cases are settled out of a courtroom, especially civil cases. How are they settled? Somebody has to be willing to make a deal. Somebody has to know how to do it. Somebody has to know how to set the stage and reorganize the cards, so to speak, so that it can be seen what the options are, what the risks are for not making a deal, to encourage the parties to make a deal. And that's what Trump is doing. Some people may think that he's dealing with a rough hand. Well, no, he knows how to make a deal. He knows what you have to do. You make a declaration, and it may be that you have to come off of that declaration to make the deal, but you have to set the stage. If you don't set the stage, you have nothing to work with. Now, in the EU, member blocs are talking about a renewal of sanctions against Russia. But the Hungarian Prime Minister, Viktor Orban, has resisted the extension of the measures for economic reasons. Why is that? Well, because they're going bankrupt in Europe. They can't handle the additional costs without using Russian oil and gas. So Orban says it's time to throw sanctions out the window. To establish a sanction-free relationship with Russia. So the ambassadors of the EU are going to be holding multiple meetings this week to break the deadlock. If they fail, the issue will be escalated to its foreign ministers. And they're going to meet in Brussels in a couple of days before the sanctions are due to expire on January 27th. So all the pressure is on. The pressure is coming from the EU. The pressure is coming from Donald Trump. The pressure is coming from Russia. The pressure is building. Now, I want to suggest to you, if you do not understand how settlements are reached, whether it's settlement in court or any other kind of settlement, settlements come not only from a will to settle, but from the pressure that comes behind the parties. Oftentimes, in court, as I was practicing attorney in civil cases and so on, a lawsuit or whatever, just before trial, the judge would require the parties to appear, especially the attorneys, but to require the parties to appear for a final settlement conference. In other words, you go into the judge's chambers, and the judge looks at the case and begins to try to evaluate, not telling the parties what they have to do, but helping them to see the weaknesses, perhaps, of their respective cases and the risks that they take in going to trial. You could lose it all. You could lose anything you're claiming, or you could have a judgment rendered against you that is so large that it would make your head reel. So the judge, the settlement judge, isn't imposing the settlement upon you, but he's creating the pressure necessary to help the parties come to resolution and set aside their pride because of the risk and the pressure that's attendant to not entering into a settlement. That's what Mr. Trump knows how to do. That's why he wrote the book, The Art of the Deal. I don't even have to read the book to understand it. I understand Donald Trump and how he works. This is how you settle a matter, whether it's a small case or whether it's a big case like the EU. Now the parties are coming to see the great risks that are attendant to not resolving this matter with Ukraine. And Donald Trump is upping the ante. He's saying, look, Mr. Putin, I respect you. You're a smart guy. No question about it. And you've got a country that you're serving, and you're trying to serve the country well, which he has said. So he's not making a mockery of Vladimir Putin. He's just saying, look, we're going to meet on the field of battle. And the battle is an interplay concerning how to resolve something that Mr. Putin has his pride and stake with against Zelensky and against Ukraine. Zelensky also has his pride at stake and power. You see, pride, power, and position, they all go together. Every one of them has these things at stake. The EU has their future at stake. So, we might want to pray for those that are involved to see the light, so to speak, and be willing to settle on reasonable terms to protect thousands and thousands, maybe millions of lives. On the other hand, to protect us all against setting a stage for far more difficult situations that would bring the world into war. Thanks for joining us here on Viewpoint. I hope this has been helpful today. Get a copy of my book, King of the Mountain, The Eternal Epic End Time Battle. It'll be very eye-opening, I think. $15 on the website, saveus.org. Write to us, add $6 for postage and handling. And let's be in prayer, friends. Much is going on. God bless and be a blessing.
You've been listening to Viewpoint with Chuck Chrismeyer. Viewpoint is supported by the faithful gifts of our listeners. Let me urge you to become a partner with Chuck as a voice to the church declaring vision for the nation. Join us again next time on Viewpoint as we confront the issues of America's heart and home.